Alrighty, everybody. Welcome to Fantie, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm wonderful, the fabulous, entertainment, pop culture, all of the things journalist Travell Anderson.
And I'm trying to figure out who this person is you continue to speak of. also known as the politics and pop culture journalist Jared Hill. We've got a fun one today. Many of you have been talking about this person. I'm not going to act like you don't know what we're talking about because you can see it in your description. This week's show is all about Tyra Banks. But first, yes, we're going to get to something we haven't done in a little while. It's called Pass the Popcorn.
Yes, Pass the Popcorn. This is our segment dedicated to some of those things we come across online that we're more than likely happy to sit on the sidelines and watch y'all debate, although sometimes we're going to jump right on in there with y'all. And today, everybody's talking about Insecure, the latest episode of Insecure. Issa and Molly, for those who don't know, they're best friends, and they really just got into this really big, like, argument and, like, what appears to be a breakdown in their friendship, and, like, people are debating, like, who's right? Right. Who's wrong? Whose team are you on? Team Molly or Team Issa?
Okay, I have to say it's very difficult for me. I'm much more Team Issa than Team Molly, but like it's really, really painful to watch these two like go down this road and fight with each other, and like you see all the moments where their friendship is deteriorating. I'm hating this, enjoying the show, but hating watching them go through this.
It's interesting because it's all communication, right? Neither one of them are doing what they need to do on the communication tip. And so, like, it bubbled up into this, like, major moment. But I know you have a particular point that a number of folks have been bringing up.
Well, wait.
Since the show began.
Before you put it back on me, what team are you on?
Oh, okay, so I'm nobody's team. I'm Team Kelly, okay?
Yes. Okay, so that is definitely something that we need to talk about. We need more Kelly. I'm still not sure if Kelly needs like a full show because it might be too much, but yeah. There definitely needs to be more Kelly. She needs an episode that really gives us like some background on her. But the thing that I've been hearing everyone talking about with Insecure, and we hear this every single week, and we've heard it every episode for years, is that Insecure never feels long enough. And I know that if you work on Insecure, if you write Insecure, you are so frustrated because
I'm tired of you motherfuckers.
Listen, right, the argument at first was we need longer seasons because they were giving us 8 episodes. They're like, fine, we're going to give you motherfuckers 10 episodes. Be happy. Now it's that the episodes aren't long enough. And I think that the show always feels a little bit short because while it is squarely a comedy, it definitely plays like a drama in a lot of ways. And we are all kind of conditioned to these hour-long dramas. And I feel like every time we're watching Insecure, just as we're like really kind of like, you know, really settled into our seat halfway through our snack, it's credits. And it's like, oh, God damn, we got to wait another week for another episode, which is a compliment because you want more of what they're giving. But it's also frustrating to always hear someone complaining about the work that you're doing. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of like that. Everybody wants more,
right?
Because you would rather somebody want more than want less.
They say, right? "Whoa, that was a long episode, bitch."
Right, exactly. So I don't know. I don't really complain too much. I mean, I like it the way it is. We get a couple more extra episodes this season,
right?
As compared to last season, so like y'all can't really complain too much.
Yeah, I do need more Kelly. I thought this past week, Kelly was just so like.
Kelly played by Natasha Rothwell,
who is fantastic. We love Natasha Rothwell. If you haven't seen her in other things, I saw Love, Simon. I think she's the best thing about Love, Simon. She's
okay. Don't be disrespectful.
I'm not saying Love, Simon is bad. I'm saying that she was the highlight of the movie for me. She was hysterical in that movie.
She's in the movie for 3 minutes.
She's got like 5 different little pop-up moments, and I think she's hysterical. But
so you're just going to ignore the great gay storyline that's happening and unfolding before our eyes.
You see how me complimenting a black woman ended up being dissing something else? Honey, the erasure of black women that just happened right now.
Wow.
No, but I think that Kelly is such a gem, and like I want more Kelly all the time.
I agree.
I always want more Kelly.
Yes.
All right, so make sure to check out Insecure on HBO every Sunday night at 7 o'clock Pacific, 10 o'clock Eastern. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get into the good, the newly bad, and the never ugly of Tyra Banks. Tyra, we know you love this show.
Get the fag off the TV. I'm not watching that.
Oh, well, damn. Maybe she doesn't. why old Tyra Banks is getting so many people new mad is coming up next.
Strange planets, curious technology, and a fantastic vision of the distant future. Featuring Martin Starr.
So we're going on day 14. Shuttle still hasn't come.
Aparna Nancherla.
The security system provides you with emotional security. You do the rest.
Echo Kellum.
Can you disconnect me or not?
Hari Kondabolu.
I'm staying.
From Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Jeffrey McGiver.
Could you play Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun?
It's The Outer Reach. Stories from beyond.
Now available for free at MaximumFun.org or anywhere you listen.
Welcome.
Thank you.
No problem.
These are real podcast listeners, not actors. What do you look for in a podcast?
Reliability is big for me.
Power.
I'd say comfort.
What do you think of this?
Oh.
That's Jordan, Jesse, Go.
Jordan, Jesse, Go?
They came out of the floor?
And down from the ceiling?
That can't be safe.
I'm upset.
Can we go now?
Soon.
Jordan, Jesse, Go. A real podcast.
Welcome back, you fabulous, wonderful people. All right, so this week's topic actually grows out of some of the recent Twitter conversation that's been happening over the last few weeks, and that's of supermodel turned television personality and actress and Harvard business graduate, Tyra Banks. She's actually not an actual graduate. But
I was
going to
say,
like,
I was going to just let it rock, but then I heard you laugh, and I was like, not going to touch it.
No, she went to one of those like certification programs.
Yes,
so like she did attend. Anyway, folks have been sharing some clips of some of her past actions as creator and host of the wonderful show America's Next Top Model, which I have to say spawned all these other reality competition shows that you see out here. Project Runway, RuPaul's Drag Race. Okay, you mm-hmm. bitches, it's her sons. All right. I'm just saying.
Oh, you bitches, it's my sons. Yes, I'm sorry.
We're going to get into some of these actions and decide maybe if Tyra Banks is actually the villain that Naomi Campbell told her she was all the many years
Yikes.
Ago. Okay,
spice.
So now, I don't know about you, but I've been rewatching America's Next Top Model since the Rona, you know, hit us and we've been quarantined. I started all the way back from season one with my partner.
I have not.
Well, choices. So I can't remember exactly what clip that I saw shared online that like kicked off this reckoning, if you will, with Tyra Banks. But I think you have one, right?
Yeah. So the first thing that I saw someone share was this really, really bad video of Tyra Banks on the Tyra Banks show, where she was saying that she had been bitten by a dog, and then take a listen.
And I was jogging today with some friends around my neighborhood, and a friggin' dog bit me. Yeah, he bit me like right here, so it's like a little weird right now. I had to get rushed to the hospital, and then the doctors are like, well, did the dog look like crazy or anything? And I'm like, well, he was angry and he, you know, was like salivating. And they're like, okay, was it like foamy salivating or was it? And I'm like, well, it was kind of foamy. And then they tested me and the dog has rabies and had to get a shot.
So she goes on to then say that basically, she had gotten rabies, or she was pretending that she had gotten rabies. She goes over and starts an interview, drinks some water, starts foaming at the mouth, jumps out of her chair, is like barking and like all in the face of an audience member. It was just weird. And that was the first thing that I saw. And then the following day is when Tyra was trending. And I was like, it can't be that rabies video, right? And it was clearly a bunch of different things.
So now, I don't know if I'm going to say that video in particular is, like, bad, weird, or whatever she did.
It was weird and bad.
Was it?
Yes.
I mean, it was, she's good television.
To be clear, it was because they were doing an episode that was all about pranks. And so, that was a prank that she was pulling on the audience that was stupid.
I mean, they obviously bought it, so, like.
No, they didn't. They looked like. What are you doing, girl? Yeah.
Well, anyway, so let's talk about, you know, before we get into some of the drama, if you will, let's talk about, like, our relationships to the queen of Bankable Productions. You go first.
So I've always been a Tyra Banks fan, even if I thought that Rabies moment was real stupid. As I said on a previous show, when I first moved to L.A.,
you had 12 million jobs.
Well, I started off like trying to find a job. And in the same week, I don't remember which came first, I got this job at a nightclub, Shut Up Travel. And then I got a job working at America's Next Top Model in post-production. And it was the British Invasion season, which I think was cycle 18 or 19. And I had, you know, watched the show plenty before. So I was kind of excited to work on it. And I remember also I had gone to the very first taping of the Tyra Banks show.
The talk show, right?
It was at CBS Television City here in Los Angeles, and I remember it. I mean, it was the first day of a talk show, so it was gonna be bad. But like, it was a very long taping. We were there for way too long, and like, Pharrell was one of the guests. And we ended up being there so long that they like were begging audience members to stay for the second taping, and they like bought in. Aww. They brought in like Subway sandwiches and all kinds of stuff just to like to keep people there, because like talk shows.
Oh, they should have brought in pizza.
Something. Talk shows take a long time to tape, so I got it. I understood. I remember as a Victoria's Secret angel. I just like Tyra Banks is one of those another one of those people who had always been around, and then mm-hmm. Top Model came and the talk show came. And like when I worked on Top Model, she then came out with Model Land, that book that she wrote, that was supposed to be a cross between like her life as a model and then Harry Potter.
In choices, again, choices.
And so it was weird, but like, you know, it was Tyra Banks, and yeah, that was the thing. What's your relationship with Tyra?
Well, so I think for me, my first recollection of Tyra was actually in Life Size, which was
come
like
on,
a
Disney.
It was like a TV movie, Disney movie, in which Tyra Banks was like this model. Well, no, she was a Barbie. She was like a black Barbie that basically came to life for this white girl. What was the white girl? Lindsay Lohan. For Lindsay Lohan. Don't look at me like that. For Lindsay Lohan. And she was like, you know, helping Lindsay like come to terms with like, I think her mother's death or something like that.
I'm not the only one that gets a little bit depressed whenever I see Lindsay Lohan in roles as a child.
Oh, the trauma jumps out?
The trauma. Like, whenever I see The Parent Trap, I always like. I always think, like, what could have been? Sorry, go ahead.
So that was 1997, right? And I'm assuming that I saw it when it was airing initially, just because of the timetable. And then when Top Model came around, like, I watched it from the very first season as it unfolded live. That was my show. And I love the fact that they did, you know, some people will see that, like, they don't call them seasons. They call them cycles. Because there would be multiple cycles a year. And so, like, they've had, like, you know, 20-some-odd cycles in 10-some-odd years. But it was, like, it was appointment television for me. And then the talk show came around. I didn't really watch the talk show much. Like, I don't have many memories of the talk show, except maybe, like, her Beyoncé interview, which wasn't really an interview because Beyoncé don't know how to talk to people.
Yikes.
I mean, look, the video. Look at the video. The proof is in the pudding, as they say.
I didn't say you were wrong. Just couldn't believe you said that.
It's, well, it is what it is.
I mean.
But that's what I remember of Tyra in like the early years, and like for me, I just always, you know, Top Model was my in, and I thought she was amazing for the most part. But that brings us to right some of these clips that have been like resurfacing, that people have been like, you know, looking at. So, you know, I should say Top Model, if you want to stream it, it's available on the Hulus. It's available on the Amazon Primes as well. And so you can get your life. And so one of the instances that I think is probably one of the biggest ones that people have been talking about is like, Tyra was putting the girls in blackface, okay? and... You know, and she did it twice, actually. There was Cycle 4, which was in 2005, and then Cycle 13, which was in, I have down, 2009. And it was these two different, like, photo shoot challenges. The first one, the girls had to, they were made to be other ethnicities and races.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second photo shoot, it was like inspired by the Hawaiian term hapa. And both involved, like, you know, some of the white girls being put in darker colored makeup to, you know, give them the effect necessary. Now, I remember watching this when it aired, and I remember being like, you know, but like, I think that first time, no one really said anything to my recollection as a young whippersnapper. And then that second time in 2009, that's when she had the talk show. And she actually addressed it. She apologized on her talk show, saying that, like, she really felt like people didn't understand the intent behind that particular challenge. Which, you know, is it blackface?
Yes. Well, because, like, here's the thing. So we're a lot of this is coming back because, like, a lot of these things didn't age well. But, like, blackface was a problem in 2009. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Blackface wasn't a new thing.
Blackface is blackface. I don't care.
Listen.
Whatever you're using to, like, darken someone's skin.
Yeah. And so, like, I mean, I want to say, like, I know that the producers and at Ken Mock, we'll talk about him a little bit later, but, like, there's a whole team of people who come up with this, right? It's not just Tyra sitting in her, you know, in her home office with a notepad coming up with ideas. Mind you, Tyra comes up with a lot of the stuff for these shows. And, like, Tyra notoriously, when she got her talk show, she talked about having come to the production company with 100 different topics that she was interested in doing as shows. So, like, Tyra's very involved, but it's not just Tyra. And so
right.
There's that.
But it's you know, it's Tyra Banks, America's Next Top Model. She is the host. She's the reason why the show became what it is. And so she do got to shoulder a lot of the responsibility for it. But even more so, she even more so has to shoulder responsibility for the things that she said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because that takes us to another instance that folks have been pulling up. And it's like some of her commentary around, like, blackness.
Mm.
And I think the most specific example that people have been referencing is Yaya DaCosta. This is Cycle 3, Episode 8. It aired back in 2004. This is the season that Eva the Diva, now of Real Housewives of Atlanta fame, that she won. This season that she won. And there's a clip from the show where the ladies have this challenge that they're supposed to choose one of these different hats and wear put together an outfit that corresponds with the hat. And there's a cowboy hat, there's a tiara, there's like a leather hat, and then there's an African kente cloth type hat. And Yaya DaCosta, she is, you know, very strong minded, if you will, in terms of her background, her culture, and all of that. And
she's a really strong Afrocentric focus.
There you go.
Yeah.
And there, in this clip, you're going to hear the judges giving commentary on her outfit and her response to them.
You have this intensity to prove your sort of Africanness, and I think that sometimes it's overbearing. It's just too much. It's sort of a layer on top of a layer. In response to trying to prove myself as an African, that's just where I come from. It's very natural to me. And I did not choose that hat for the very specific reason that it's very cliche. The fabric that it's made from is very artificial, very cheap, fake kente.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't have the time, I know I'm running on.
There's a different way of explaining yourself and being defensive, and you're being very defensive, and it's not attractive.
Just because we had a talk about, you know, Afrocentricity before, and it's kind of misunderstood.
I'm all about, like, expressing yourself and your culture, but it's still done in a fashion way. You want your outfit to be, look at me, and this outfit is, look over there.
Yikes, look over there. That was strong. That was strong.
And like, that's an example of her, like, those are your words, Tyra.
Yeah.
Yeah, the challenge might have been what it is, but, like, those are your words. And I should say, the female voice that you hear, her name is Rebecca Weinberg. She was a guest judge that challenge, and she was a stylist. And she had, like, given them advice on, like, what they should be doing, how they should be comporting themselves. Like, that type of comment is, I think, I don't know if that type of comment is forgivable. Because, like, you are the black judge on this panel. You should have, I think people are saying at least, you could have, I don't want to say taken up for her, but, like, softened the blow, or, like, at least understood what she was trying to say, right?
I mean, I get what what Yaya was trying to say. And I feel like Tyra was coming at it from a very, like, this isn't fashion kind of way. It just didn't come out very well, which makes you think, like, whenever someone says something that was really off color, when you apologize for something, we're not always upset that you said something. I'm more so concerned about the way you think about something, right? And, like, that, I was just like, I don't know. She's kind of towing the line for me on that one.
Yeah, and there were other, you know, instances where, you know, some of the girls might have been, you know, they might have been a little hood, you know.
A little rougher around the edges.
You know, shout out to Tiffany.
How dare you!
Okay. And her way of, like, dealing or, like, I guess not understanding just how they move through the world and how they might speak, like, you know, really rubs people today the wrong way. And you made a particular point that I want to highlight, and it's, like, this idea of, like, Tyra and a lot of her commentary at the time was about, like, her experience in the fashion industry. We're talking to you in the way that the industry will talk to you. And so, like, you need to get tough. And there's another example of, like, the big girls on Top Model that, like, I have to mention, because I feel like the big girls were getting, they were getting their asses handed to them.
I was
going to
say, they were taking shit.
Week after week.
I know Takara's probably my favorite big girl from the show. I remember
Takara. Season three.
And Takara was coming in, giving you everything that you needed, and was getting nothing that she wanted back.
I remember the episode that Takara goes home. You just see the energy drain out of her because they have this big girl in the competition with these skinny hoes, but they aren't doing what they need to do on the production side to get her the types of outfits that the skinny girls got. And so it's like, you are setting her up to fail.
Yeah.
Like maybe it is a reflection of the fashion industry, but where does your intervention as a black woman in this position come in?
Well,
and I think that's what a lot of people have issues with when they look back on it.
I continually wonder where Tyra's mind was in that space, because I think to myself, like, this is a space that you've created. Like, you can make it as safe or unsafe as you want it to be. And you can choose to make it safer. But then I think, like, well, is she trying to give them the feedback that they're going to get out in the world, the space that isn't so safe? I want to create, like, a possibility for that, but it's hard to get there. Like, it's difficult.
It felt like in the moment, and even watching it back as I have, it felt like a feigned support of the big girls. It felt like, oh, we're going to put you in this competition because, you know, maybe it'll be good
this.
For gradings. Right. We want to push the envelope, but, like, you're not really supporting the girls. And, like, you know, I should say, I think it was season or cycle 10 in 2008, the top model had its first quote-unquote plus size. I mean, I think she was like a size 10 or something like that. But they had their first plus size winner in Whitney. That always felt off, especially when you then consider that on her talk show, she was doing all of these conversations around body positivity.
You can kiss my fat ass!
Very that, okay? Very that. And it was just so interesting. It's just so interesting. But you talked about how theoretically Tyra should have created, like, a safe space for the girls that were coming into the show because she was the boss. And that brings me to Dani, also known as Danielle. She went by Danielle during the series and then shortened her name once she won. This is cycle 6 in 2006, I believe. And this is one of the I guess it's being called Teethgate on the internet.
Oh.
This is one of the big situations that, like, got Tyra trending. And that is Dani and this other young lady on the show by the name of Joni. They had, you know, some teeth issues, okay? Joni had, like, a little snaggletooth situation going on. And then Dani had a wider gap than what she currently has. And Tyra and the judges made this big deal about how neither one of them could be on magazine covers. Neither one of them could be cover girls. Neither one of them could have a fruitful career with a jacked up smile. In their words, not my word. Okay, don't come for me. And so they gave them the opportunity to get their smiles fixed. And they go, they get their smiles fixed. Joni gets a whole new grill. And then Danny chooses initially not to close her gap. She just gets it cleaned. And then what you find, what we see on TV, I should say, is that they come to the judging room, and the judges are like, why didn't you get your teeth fixed? And they basically berate Danny and ended up, you know, coming to a sort of compromise that Danny would, like, close her gap slightly, but not all the way. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, the compromise. This was one of the big issues that a lot of folks on, you know, Twitter during this particular moment brought up, because they were like, oh, my God, you berated this girl and forced her to get this cosmetic surgery when it wasn't necessary. When you've been in this industry talking about people are beautiful however they come and all of that. So Danny went on IG, on her IG recently, and basically, like, answered it and, like, told it from her perspective. Right. She said, you know, at the start of the video that she wasn't interested in bashing Tyra, but she wanted to provide kind of her perspective on things. And long story short, she basically said that I was trying to get out of Little Rock, Arkansas. Okay? And I was willing to do whatever I needed to do to get out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And so she closed her teeth. She used the video to, like, you know, tell people that they're beautiful as they are and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But there's a drive that she has that, you know, she didn't say this, but, like, was a little, you know, exploited, perhaps, by Top Model. And she actually talks about how that particular scene and that back and forth with the judges was actually like 20 or 30 minutes long. And that's when she realized that, like, oh, if I don't close my teeth today, they're going to kick me off the show.
So one of the things that I think people don't consider enough on these shows is, like, how much you don't see. And when I worked at Top Model, I was working in post-production. And so we had all the footage coming in while the seasons were being shot. And mm-hmm. I was immediately shocked by how long the judging sessions go on. They go on for what feels like an eternity, especially when I was a logger. So, like, logging, you have to go in. And as you're watching the footage, you have to say what's happening every, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds or whatever. So editors can go back and find whatever the producers say they want to put in. And you would just spend endless amounts of time watching the girls talk with Tyra or the judges or them resetting or them going back over something or having a cover. So, like, what I say all this to say, like, these are the conversations that they decided to put in. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There's
so you didn't see all the other shit.
Exactly. There's so much of the conversation that gets left out. But, like, the little bits and pieces that you end up seeing in the show are what they were like, oh, this is what should go in the show. And it's like, looking back at it now, again, it's like, this one sure didn't taste good as you watch it again later. You know what I mean?
Right. Which, you know, they always say hindsight is 20/20 or whatever the case may be. But, you know, and we're gonna get there because I do have some questions for you to break down how people are, like, coming to Tyra in this moment. But you brought up something when we were pre-producing this episode that I thought was interesting in terms of how you feel about Miss Tyra Banks.
Well, it's not about how I feel specifically. Like, I like Tyra Banks, but I've always tried to figure out why there always seems to be a challenge with audiences connecting with her specifically. I feel like people mm-hmm. really, really love Top Model in a way that they don't necessarily love Tyra Banks. Kind of in a similar way we were talking about RuPaul and how, like, I know people that watch Drag Race, but are really kind of challenged by RuPaul specifically.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's about really wanting to support those queens and supporting the moment, kind of similarly to how I feel like people felt about Top Model. But I always wondered, like, Tyra has this personality trait where she's just, like, over the top goofy and bobbling her head around and being, like, silly and whatever. And, like, I've always wondered which one of two things it was. Either that's genuinely her personality and people aren't buying it, or that's an affectation, if you will, or her trying mm-hmm. to be something and people never buying it. And I've always had a challenge trying to figure out which one it was, because I don't find Tyra Banks to be particularly relatable, or, like, she never feels like you're getting like a genuine, authentic personality. Hmm. I always feel like you're trying to figure out like, what are you giving here? Like, what is this?
That's interesting because like, I don't feel that way. I mean, I don't feel she's relatable because like, you know, she ain't to me in my Yikes. Life. But like, I feel like there's a lot of girls out there. And FYI listeners, girls for me is gender neutral. Girls with a Y.
And a Z.
Yes. but I feel like there's a lot of girls out there that like relate to her in some particular way.
Absolutely. I'm just not one of them.
That part, okay? But it's interesting because like I feel like, you know, she makes good TV. I feel like she figured out through Top Model and eventually her talk show how to make good TV. That's why Top Model went for 20-some-odd cycles. That's why her, even her talk
show
went
for 5 different countries.
Seasons. Right.
Top Model has gone into
a major...
Top Model is a major franchise, right? Like, with franchises all around the world and probably some that are still running right now. So, and as you said earlier, like, inspired so many other shows that we now love.
Yeah, and so that brings us to, all of this brings us to, you know, the apology. So she started to, girl, she's, you know, y'all made her trend on the internet, and she was like, ooh, girl, let me, you know, type up my iOS press release. And so she basically, she tweeted out an apology, and she says, been seeing the post about the insensitivity of some past ANTM moments, and I agree with you. Looking back, those are really off choices. Appreciate your honest feedback, and am sending so much love and virtual hugs. That tweet was retweeted and commented on by Ken Mock, as you mentioned earlier, who's one of the producers of ANTM.
Yeah.
Executive producers, one of the big bosses.
Yeah.
And so he says, I want to reiterate what Tyra Banks said. I look at some of those ANTM moments and cringe. Just a FYI, the entire creative team made the choices in the shows, not just Tyra. So please feel free to yell at me for some of the worst moments in ANTM history. Apologies to all.
I'm so fascinated. He uses the double space after the period, which just kind of, it's just weird to me. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I hate it too. But, you know.
I mean, it's technically right, but it's so wrong. But go ahead.
Is it technically right?
I think technically it's right. But, I mean, holiness is right, and I ain't been to church, so who knows? Go ahead on.
Because you're a heathen. That's why. And so one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, in the context of this particular conversation is like, in pursuit of making good television and making good television that ran for 20 some odd cycles that spawned all of these other shows, is what we saw then and what we see now forgivable? Like, does an apology, if we're going to call those tweets apologies, suffice?
So I always believe that responsibility is something that you choose, that is not like assumed, right? Like, if you okay. take on the responsibility of being of making this a safe space, and you want it to be, you know, whatever it is, like, that is a responsibility that you choose. It's not like pushed upon you. And I think Tyra felt a bit of responsibility for the ways that these things are coming across, but also at the same time, like, people weren't complaining about it back then. You know what I mean? Like, people continued to watch. And I'm sure, you know, the CW, or I believe UPN, where the show started. I'm sure people probably, they got letters, but we also didn't have Twitter, right? Like, we didn't have right. social media in a way that people could have, like, such an immediate response or a very delayed response, depending on how you look at this, right? But I think that Tyra Banks was making this show and people were loving it. And if people were loving it, like, you can't be mad at her for like being a part of this. I do also think that like we have to appreciate that things do not always taste the same years later. You know what I mean? Mm. Like we're seeing this right now in the political sphere with Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden, when he was first getting into this presidential race, they were talking about the ways that he hugged people too much or he would touch people too much. And like maybe 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that was okay. But like right. nowadays it's not. And I think that we always have to consider the context of the time. Like if we're talking about sexual harassment and rape and assault, that's a different thing. But if we're talking right. about things that just didn't, that don't play well now, that were seemingly okay back then, I think that's a different thing. And I think that's what we have here with Tyra.
And I think there's something to be said rather about ANTM did do some like legendary things in terms of representation, in terms of the types of kind of sociopolitical conversations that they were trying to have with their photo shoots. Like, you know, shout out to Isis King, who was, you know, the first trans model on the show. I think it was Cycle 17. It's done so many that photo shoots about homelessness, about addiction, about, you know, the ills of plastic surgery. There were some like positive things, and then it also was a ticket out of people's communities for the ones that like really wanted to model and get out of their community, like,
sure,
you know, with the bad, I guess, as we're talking about it, does come a lot of good as well. Like, you know, it gets to these conversations we often have about like, should you be canceling people? Can you cancel people? And like, you know, there was some tweet that I saw on Twitter that was basically like, you know, y'all try to cancel Tyra Banks every few months.
Listen.
But the person who tweeted, she was like, you know, the Zoom generation, okay, the time to expire, the time to cancel Tyra Banks expired in 2012.
Listen,
okay?
If you were going to do it, it was going to happen. She's here to stay, basically.
She's here to stay. She's not going anywhere. She was on America's Got Talent, you know, for a season.
And even to I think it was two, and none of us watched it, so it doesn't really matter. But like,
yikes.
I also just want to point out, like, there are not many things on television that were imagined, created by, executive produced, and starred a black woman at the helm either, right? Like,
right.
There are not a whole lot of those things that exist, especially back in that time. I said especially, not especially. It's
that's
like similar.
Right.
It's a word. But I just want to acknowledge that what she did was extraordinary. And when you are in that kind of a position in front of that many people making like an extraordinary moment, like, there are bound to be times when you're going to step in it. And mind you, she stepped in it plenty, as Twitter has shown us.
Well, so before we wrap up, I've got two quick questions for you. The first, do you think that like she and the show, right, exploited these women? Did they, you know, exploit their desire, their drive to get out of their communities? And in effect, that fact alone cancels out a lot of the positive and a lot of the joy and a lot of the praise that we might have the show. That's one. And then two, Tyra and all of the judges always talk about how, you know, they wanted to reflect how the actual industry was going to be for these women. Does that make it okay that they were reflecting the industry?
So to the first question, I want to be clear, like, exploit has a really negative connotation to it, but like,
yes,
television is exploitation.
Very
period.
Much so. Especially reality TV.
Especially reality TV. If we just look at like the definition of the word, it exploit, verb, make full use of and derive benefit from a resource. Like,
come on, Merriam-Webster.
Listen, I just want to be clear. Like, is it exploitative? Like, you went on a reality show. Like, you went there to be made use of. You know what I mean? So, like,
right.
I don't necessarily have so much of an issue in that space because, like, this is something you signed up for, that you went through an audition process for. You've seen multiple seasons of, for most of the girls who participated, right? You knew what you were signing up for. You knew what this right. was going to be. The idea of it reflecting the modeling industry and was she right or wrong for that, that's something that I'll always kind of be challenged with, because I think there is some real value in saying, like, listen, I do think that there is value in being able to create a space that is safe for you to be able to come into the modeling world. When I went to an HBCU, I went to Clark Atlanta University, and I remember saying to some friends, like, if you're not careful, you can come out of an HBCU having this idea that the world is black owned, and it ain't. Right. And so, like, I think you have to go into those spaces recognizing what it is, what you're doing, and what to expect when you leave here. And, like, I don't know if Tyra Banks would have been doing those girls a service to, like, treat them in a different way than they were going to be treated out in their careers. Like, you're here at Top Model for, you know, 2 months. Your modeling career could go on for years, right?
Right.
So I don't know. It's a hard thing to answer. And I would imagine that she might feel and say, like, I wanted to prepare these girls for what they were going to deal with. Like, Nigel Barker is probably going to shoot you at some point. You know what I mean? Jay Alexander mm-hmm. might actually be coaching you down a runway. You know, and so, like, I don't know if it's easy to answer that.
Yeah.
What do you think? I feel similarly conflicted.
What I do know is that it's good television. Even all these years later, as I am watching it back, I am entertained and I know what's happening. You know, I am entertained by the fact that, you know, there was one girl, I think her name was Nicole, I can't remember, who her best friend or something had died. And then, like, the next day, they had a challenge where they had to pose as one of the seven deadly sins in a grave. And
sis, listen, honey, the timing is trash.
Listen, right. It is. But guess what? That was some good TV, y'all. I was ripped.
Well, and I think what people have to think about in those moments is like, oh my God, they did that to her on purpose. No, sweetie. A room full of challenge producers put this together months ago and scouted locations and figured out the caskets and found people to dig graves and moved dirt. And you know what I mean? Like, they didn't do this overnight because this girl's friend died. Sorry. Right. I don't know how it worked.
Right, right. It's just interesting. I do think that there is something to be said about, like, holding people accountable for the stuff that they said and the things that they did. And I'm glad that Tyra and Ken Mock aren't, like, shying away from the bullshit. I'm glad they have, like, the same eyeglasses that we all got.
Sure.
And I wish that they, you know, might have done some things differently during that time. But, like, you know, hell, we here now.
Can I tell you a fun story before we get a break from Tom Otto?
Oh, Lord.
So I worked on the British Invasion season where Sophie won. British Invasion was when they brought the girls over from the different UK versions of... I think they were winners from the UK version, and they brought in American girls to compete against them. And in the finale, Sophie wins, obviously. But, like, what you never saw on the air was Sophie didn't realize that she was winning $100,000 in cash. And so they asked her, like, so what are you going to do with $100,000? And she goes, huh? And they're like, the $100,000 that you won, girl, what are you going to do with the money? And she was like, wait, are you serious? She was so excited. And I really wanted it to go in the final episode, but it never did. She was so shocked.
She's going to pay her taxes. That's
listen,
what she's going
to do. Okay, and then flight back home, but to the UK, because she thought she was winning $100,000 value in, like, prizes,
in
not
$100,000.
Yeah, yeah. And we in the post-production room just thought it was, like, the best moment of shock and surprise. Never made it to TV.
Well, there it goes then. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got some of your feedback and, as always, our dishonorable mentions.
Hey, what's up, Fancy listeners? So I know that most of us are stuck in the house right now and trying to figure out what we're supposed to be doing with getting ourselves together with fitness or with our exercise, with meditation, with just listening to music or on one of those damn Zoom meetings. But we've got just the thing for you. They are the Raycon earbuds that we have been using. If you look on Instagram and watch our videos, I always have one in my ear. They are fantastic. They are really, really helpful. But before you go dropping hundreds of dollars to try and find a pair of wireless earbuds, you need to check out Raycon. Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market. And they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands.
I always say that one of the things I love the most about them is that they are just, like, light and seamless. And because my neighbors are, they just be doing the foolishness all throughout the night and the day, I can just pop them in, and they're great at just, like, noise canceling. Yesterday, there was the one of the neighbors got a new dog, and they left the dog, and the dog was just barking up a storm all day. I popped in the Raycon earbuds, and it didn't hear the little mutt at all. Okay, I love animals, but, you know, he was barking all day, getting on my nerves. So if you're interested in trying out the Raycon earbuds for yourself, now is the time to get the latest and greatest. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/fanti. That's buyraycon, buyraycon.com/fanti for 15% off Raycon wireless wireless earbuds. BuyRaycon.com/Fanti.
That's BuyRaycon.com/Fanti. I hate me too. It's funny. Welcome back to Fanti. It's now time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories of people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or their downright stupid. My first one is going to go to Mindy Kaling. You guys might know Mindy Kaling from The Mindy Project or a bunch of other things. She's done a lot of stuff nowadays. She has a brand new show on Netflix called Never Have I Ever. And when I tell you I flew through this show, I had never seen any marketing for it, but a friend of mine was like, oh my God, I'm watching Never Have I Ever, and it's so good. Love the show. It's about this, I don't even want to give like too much of what the show is about, but it's a girl in high school.
It's really cute.
And it's hilarious, and I love the diversity and inclusion of the show. I love the humor of the show. I love where it ends. Like, it's just, it's a fantastic show. So check out Netflix's Never Have I Ever. It's streaming right now.
It's really cute. I really enjoyed it. My first honorable mention actually is another Netflix show. I'm one of those people that loves like the cooking competition shows. And
yes.
So I want to give a shout out to Cooking with Cannabis, which stars Khalees as one of the hosts.
Let me tell you, I feel like I must have shouted this out already. It's such a good show. I don't know, but are you watching it now?
I mean, I've been watching it in pieces, but it's just so good. And like,
it's so good.
And I'm whether like, oh, like I need to go get some weed.
Yes. Right. What I love about the show, like if you're, okay, again, another Netflix show. I don't want to step on yours. So go, let you finish and then I'll finish. Okay.
Well, yeah, I'm saying is that it's like it takes one of those traditional cooking competition show formats and it's people who can cook with cannabis, with weed in their food, right? And so it's like it's just so good, and I think it's also very educational. They make sure they educate you about different strains and like THC versus CBD and all of that. It makes me want to go get some weed and, you know, figure out how to, you know, make some brownies or some cookies or something.
So you know as well as anyone that I've been in here baking like a white woman with the TV show, and people have been starting to say to me that I need to start cooking with weed. And I was like, oh, that'd be such an interesting thing. And I can make edibles and blah, 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 blah. And then Cooking with Cannabis came out and I was just super intrigued. I think what's so fascinating about the show is they present the food with the weed in different like strains, but also different amounts. And they talk about, well, I started off with this because I wanted to kind of like guide you in slowly. And then I take you here with this weed in the entree. And then I coast you out with the weed at the dessert. And I was like, oh, this is way more than just throwing weed into some brownie mix. You know what
Very
I mean?
Much
it's
so.
So smart. And you're like, I stan Khalees on this show. I just want
She deserves.
I just want a reality show hanging out with Khalees all day, every day. Cooking with Cannabis, I 100% agree with you on this show. Okay.
It's so good.
I'm giving a dishonorable mention to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. I'm not going to get all the way into it because you know how I can get on this. But there's a political article. The headline says, it says McConnell, Obama, quote, should have kept his mouth shut. Apparently last week, Barack Obama was in a call discussing, you know, various different things in the last week. And, you know, someone had asked him about coronavirus response. And he said that it was, quote, an absolute chaotic disaster. And Mitch McConnell has basically come out saying that Barack Obama should have kept his mouth shut and shouldn't have been talking because former presidents have this tradition of, you know, keeping quiet when they're out of office. And I'm just like, bitch, I know you fucking lying. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it alone. What's next?
Well, I'm going to actually do my last two, my second and my third honorable mentions together. The first one, it goes just generally to like authors who are like putting out their first book. Maybe even their second or third book during this particular time. Some folks that y'all should check out: Michael Arsenault's I Don't Want to Die Poor, George M. Johnson's All Boys Aren't Blue, Meredith Toulousan's Fairest. That's coming out later this month. And then this brings me to my other honorable mention, which is specifically to the legendary, speaking of Top Model, Andre Leon Talley, who is releasing a memoir next week on the 19th, I believe, called The Chiffon Trenches. I've been reading an advanced copy of it. I think I've said on this show before that Anjali Yontelli is one of my possibility models. And like I've just been like sopping up this book like a biscuit in gravy. Just, you know, it is just so good to me as someone who like, you know, looks up to this particular individual. So shout out to those folks.
Explain what a possibility model is to people, Trevo.
A possibility model is like a role model, except I don't use role model because I feel like I'm not trying to follow in anybody else's footsteps, but I would like to know what is possible for someone like me. So Andre Leon Talley is somebody who's shown me what is possible.
I love that. Okay. For the last one, this is going to be an honorable mention. I'm going to pass my honorable mention.
I didn't know that we could do that.
We can't. It's not a thing. If this were a thing, we'd hear someone go, pass the dishonorable mention. Like, me too. If you know, you know. If you don't, you don't. But we got a DM on Instagram. We got a DM from Elliot Rittenberry, and he was talking to us about something that he felt like we should have put into the show as an honorable mention last week. He says, I haven't listened to this week's episode yet, but I'm hoping to hear that one of your honorable mentions is the Pulitzer Prize Committee's, it's to the Pulitzer Prize Committee, as well as Michael R. Jackson, to be clear, not Michael Joe Jackson, at The Living Michael Jackson on Instagram. He says he's the first black gay playwright who won for a drama. It's the 10th musical to ever win, and the first one that hasn't even hit Broadway yet. I don't know how much you both get into theater, but this show follows a queer, black, perhaps non-binary, I've not seen the show, so I won't assume, who covers the issues of white girls' privilege to the gay marketplace of Grindr and many, many places in between. The cast album is on Spotify and well worth your hot take if you haven't heard it yet. It says it's at the very least worth celebrating. The other interesting thing about this, though, is in the show, there's a full diss track on Tyler Perry.
Yes.
What's most interesting about this is that Tyler Perry ended up texting Michael R. Jackson when he won the Pulitzer. And Michael R. Jackson put the text into an Instagram post. And the text from Tyler Perry says, Mr. Jackson, this is Tyler Perry. Congrats on your Pulitzer. I can't wait to meet you on the streets of New York. Ooh. Not exactly sure what that meant, but...
I would have said, "Catch me outside."
Catch me outside.
Exactly. Wow.
And so you can find Michael Jackson at The Living Michael Jackson on Instagram. But also, congratulations to him for the Pulitzer. I know that Tyler Perry does have a history of like reaching out to black creators, even those that have been critical of him. I did a piece on Justin Simeon from Dear White People, and if you remember the movie Dear White People, honey, they come for brother Perry. I know that Tyler and Justin have really like become friends based on like their communications and conversations. So congratulations there. That's it for dishonorable mentions.
I do want to just say, I did mention him when I mentioned, you know, Ida B. Wells' Pulitzer the other week. But yes, shout out to him, the history. You deserve all of the different things. That brings us to listener feedback. This is our section where we hear what y'all got to say about the foolishness that we do's on this show. Okay?
Yes.
And we got a Instagram?
This was an Instagram DM as well. It says, hello, new fans to your podcast. I've been thoroughly enjoying the content. I do have a question. Could you please explain to me how black people can't be racist, or point me to a good article? He says, I've heard this numerous times before and I've never really understood it. I just want to continue to educate myself. Thank you for all of your hard work. Thumbs up. Or actually, it's like, what is the Hawaiian thing that they do?
Is that Hawaiian? I feel like it's surfer dude, like hang
no,
ten.
I want to say it's like, I can't think of what it's called. But anyway, that emoji, William. So I feel like we're going to do an episode on something that'll give more room for this discussion. But I do say that like we want to just kind of answer this question because I said this in a previous episode. And I have this clip on my Instagram, on my IGTV of Dr. Joy DeGruy, where she really answers this question in a really succinct, perfect way. Take a listen.
How many people think there are white racists? That there are white racists out there? How many think there are black racists out there? Tell me the ways in which white racism adversely impacts the lives of black people. Just what are the ways that white racism can adversely impact the lives of black people as a group? What are some of those ways? I'm sorry? Power, but how is that defined specifically? Education, okay. Economically, employment. What else? Housing, what else? Policing, healthcare, okay. Now, we could actually kind of grow that list. Now we're going to move over to black racism. Tell me the ways in which black racism adversely impacts the lives of white people as an entire group. Thank you. You see the difference in what racism is, do you not? Racism implies you have not just prejudice, but the power to do something with that prejudice.
She goes on to explain that you can dislike people, but you don't have the power to do something about it if you're a black person, right? So she says in the video, so many different, she gives like these great examples of like why this is not something that, that racism is not something that black people even have the power to have. Black people have the power for prejudice, not the power for racism, because racism is a system that holds down an entire group of people. So you can see that on my Instagram, IGTV, look for Dr. Joy DeGruy, and I'll make sure that we put the link in the episode description.
Thank you so much, William, for that particular question. You can send our fee to MaximumFun.org for giving...
What?
For giving you this little bit of education. Listen,
The
labor is not free, honey.
Listen, we both have websites with email addresses. You can run us our invoice.
Okay, pay us. But thank you all so much for always listening every single week. 5-star reviews on iTunes, please, if you enjoy it, which we know you do because you keep on coming back. If you have a comment or a suggestion about this week's show or a prior week's show, feel free to let us know. Tweet us at Fanti Podcast, or you can follow us on the Instagrams at Fanti Podcast as well, or send us an email at fanti@maximumfun.org.
Org, to be clear, not erg, because I don't know. Never mind.
They know what
We want to thank the composer of our music, Corice. You can find him wherever you find Slayworthy Audio. That's Core, Corice. And Ashley Nguyen, who did our photos and did the great graphics on our social media videos that you see on Instagram. We love her and appreciate her. Our producer is Laura Swisher. And this week, Jordan Cowling. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
You ready now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. 2 seconds.
Oh, so you not ready?
Well, I was ready until I didn't become ready. Now I am ready.
You know what we call that? Not ready.